From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The path forward lies in bold and honest action. Now that we've addressed the roots of Illinois' financial crisis, it's time to take bold steps to secure our long-term financial future.
Does anybody really believe that you can't find some savings in the state budget?
And he told the truth. He laid the cards on the table. If we wish to continue to provide the level of services which we've become accustomed to for education and other purposes, then the income tax increase should be extended.
If it goes to the credibility, I would ask taxpayers to look at the state of this state now and whether they think they're getting good value for their money. If they think it's great, fine, send them more. I believe taxpayers are entitled to a much better deal.
If action is not taken to stabilize our revenue code, extreme and radical cuts will be imposed on education and critical public services.
And has placed before the General Assembly and the public this Hobson's choice of either school children be learning in the streets or in tin sheds or in lean-tos unless we approve another multi-billion dollar tax increase.
Governor Quinn makes an election year bid to keep the state's income tax in place. And House Speaker Michael Madigan advances the millionaire tax and pushes another constitutional amendment. And the sounds you heard there were both the pros and cons and the actual comments from Governor Quinn saying the state budget must have the income tax made permanent or we are due for major cuts and major hardship. And as part of that, he offered up property tax relief, a $500 annual rebate for homeowners across the state of Illinois. We'll talk about those topics on State Week today. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In the WUIS State Capitol Bureau, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. And our guest, Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media, which includes the Springfield Journal Register and Peoria Journal Star, among others. And Doug, thanks for stopping by after covering another budget address in your career.
Well, glad to be here.
And we'll start, Amanda Venicky. And the basic message was keep the tax, make permanent the temporary income tax increase from a couple of years back, and we'll give a property tax rebate. We'll send a check out to homeowners, and then it appears Democrats are poised to get this thing moving. You can elaborate from there.
Well, as you said, Bill, yes, the takeaway is that the governor would like to make the temporary income tax increase permanent, but you would probably not have gotten that had you just been listening to his speech. That was very, very well hidden, veiled. All he really muttered was, "We want to keep the current tax rate the same," was basically what Quinn said. He spent most of his speech in the beginning listing his accomplishments. Then he spent a lot of time saying, what if Illinois does not do something? Again, not saying all that much about what it was. It was clear that he doesn't want to be a governor who's saying income tax increase, because, well, for obvious reasons. And then he spent the bulk of his speech talking about this property tax relief and his justifications for it, saying that it's regressive, that Illinois has one of the what's one of Illinois' biggest problems. And so really selling the carrot element of his new budget and tax plan versus the stick portion of it.
And it's unique in an election year most of the time to come out saying you want an income tax increase. Now, Jim Edgar, when he was running for his first term in office, that he was a Republican supporting making a tax increase permanent. And but this time, when you're an incumbent and it's already been a rough year politically and you're facing a tough challenge in the name of Bruce Rauner, it seems a bit odd, but I guess that's the way it rolls, Doug Finke.
Well, yeah. I'm not. It certainly is out of the ordinary for I think a major party candidate for governor to ever come out in an election year and ask the legislature to vote on a major tax issue. It's not a tax increase per se. It's a continuation of the rates that we have now. So I guess he can get some wiggle room on that front. And you draw a good comparison with Edgar when he first ran. He ran on a platform of maintaining what was then a temporary tax increase. Edgar was that was his first run for office. He doesn't come into the election with the baggage that Quinn does, and Quinn's popularity figures are not good. The voters, I think, don't really have a lot of faith in what he's done so far or where we're going in the future, and that may make a huge difference in this.
You did get a lot of reaction following this speech, for example, from the House Speaker, who it is fairly obvious had worked in conjunction with the governor in creating this plan, given by, you can take that away from the remarks that the speaker made following the address and calling it, you know, my demands, and his direct support, as we heard in the opening there, for the income tax increase. But the speaker calling Quinn courageous and saying it took political courage. Clearly that it's a chance, it's a risk. I think the mindset from Quinn being that it's better than all of these dramatic cuts that people won't like, particularly from some of his key constituencies, and that maybe voters will appreciate this honesty. And so far, we have not really seen any sort of plan from Bruce Rauner other than, you know, grow the economy. He had talked a lot about government union bosses in the primary race and hoping to save some money by curtailing that. But we haven't seen any real ideas from him in terms of what he would do with the state budget. So maybe that's Quinn's calculation. I will add, however, that Quinn, in talking about this, he did take some other options off the table. He said he would not consider, for example, taxing retirement income. That is something that had been suggested by the respected Civic Federation as an option for Illinois going forward. He also said, although he'd previously, you know, in his prior years as governor, embraced some sort of taxing of services, he said he won't do that because that's, you know, wrong for the people. And so making a political calculation clearly in that regard by choosing his one tax. And there was also some disappointment, I'll add, from advocates of the progressive income tax, something that Quinn, when he first came into office, had said he wanted, something that would tax individuals a higher rate based on if they have a higher paycheck that they're taking home. And he did not advocate that. And so there was some disappointment for those that are working to go that route.
Well, it occurs to me that it was a pretty brave thing, but as you said, it wasn't unprecedented in the sense that Jim Egger laid his cards on the table, so to speak, when he was running back in 1990, and it was a clear choice, and the voters chose Edgar over then-Attorney General Neil Hartigan, who argued we did not need this increase to continue. And I think for Quinn, it's a calculated gamble. But it's something that I believe he felt had to be done. And if you actually look at his budget document and, you know, get beyond just the rhetoric of the speech, he lays out in pretty stark terms what the, from his point of view, the consequences would be if you don't continue the income tax rates at their same level. The book is interesting because it lists kind of program by program, almost line item by line item, all the expenditures. And there are two columns. One is the governor's recommendations, and the other is the governor's not recommended budget. And he explains in his overview that's part of the budget document that the current law says that the rates are going to drop down. And he says the not recommended fiscal year 2015 budget represents the austere across-the-board reductions in year-over-year spending if the rates are allowed to go down. As a result, the governor does not recommend this level of expenditures, but is statutorily required to produce a budget with this level of spending.
And just so you get the point about not recommended, all those columns of numbers are shaded in red, or yeah. I guess you could even say blood red, just to kind of reinforce the idea that he does not want to do that stuff.
Now, a couple of things that were outlined. We've mentioned the tax increase. We've mentioned the property tax refund. He was also proposing to double the earned income tax credit over several years, increasing funding, and he did this in education funding. He did this in a way announcing it over a five-year plan rather than just a one-year plan. He also offered up tax cuts for job training and a couple of things related to corrections. There were two youth prisons they closed in the past year in Murfreesboro or Joliet. I don't know if it was the past year, but during his years in office, and those would reopen as different types of correctional facilities. Those are some of the highlights and headlines. Is there anything else that caught your attention out of this budget proposal?
At this point, the speech itself was very focused on the property tax and the drastic cuts that he says would happen if an increase in the income tax did not occur. So at this point, there's been a lot of focus on that. That's been the theater more than the headlines. I think Quinn may be being careful in doing so, because the criticism that you get from Republicans is that all that Democrats are looking to do is look for an opportunity to spend. And so whereas Quinn also, I guess something that you kind of touched on in terms of the investment that he wants to make and the education portion, but particularly this Birth to Five initiative that he highlighted during his State of the State speech. So that's something I think we can expect to hear more about. But this is for sure something less about flashy headlines in that regard. And I think that's part of the equation. Part of making it less about look at how much we can do and that's why I need to reach into your wallets. It's more look what will happen in less.
Well, and it also some of the choices he's made in there in terms of the so-called sweeteners help reinforce the notion of the populace running against the billionaire. For example, the change, instead of giving you a credit on your income tax for a percentage of your property taxes paid for homeowners, he says homeowners will get a flat $500. Now, if your property taxes are above $10,000, you'll wind up losing money. On the other hand, if your property taxes on your home are less than $10,000, you'll actually come out ahead. The folks who have property taxes in excess of $10,000, by and large, have more expensive homes, and therefore you might suspect they are probably better off than the people who have low property taxes. So that's one element. The earned income credit, which he proposes doubling, is another program that's designed to put money in the pockets of lower wage earners. And again, the wealthier folks don't really benefit from the earned income tax credit. On the other hand, the poor people do. So this is, again, a contrast between here I am, Pat Quinn, the populist, looking out for the little guy. I'm not going to tax, make you pay sales tax when you take your dog to the vet or when you go to the barber shop. I'm not going to tax Social Security for that little old retired school teacher. It's reinforcing, as I say, this notion of Quinn, the populist, versus Rauner, the jillionaire.
And now it does set up a divide or certainly a differentiation between the candidates running for governor, Amanda Wenecke. Bruce Rauner was not in Springfield this time around for the speech. Seems like it would have been a good time for him to have shown up to start bad-mouthing a governor that says he's going to, in one sense, raise taxes, although it's keeping the tax level the same.
Well, I would argue the reason that he's not here is the same reason why he doesn't show up in Springfield, period. From my observation, Bruce Rauner has yet to lay out a specific program dealing with all of these issues. The governor has to. He has to propose a budget. Rauner can hide out wherever he's hiding out, run his ads saying that I'm going to shake up Springfield. And my suspicion is the reason that he doesn't want to come to Springfield and meet with the Springfield press corps is because he would have to dodge tough questions that he's not prepared to answer, either because he just doesn't want to say or because he's clueless. And until he shows up with some specific plan and is willing to meet with the Springfield Press Corps and take their hard questions, like gubernatorial candidates have done from day one, I think he's hasn't demonstrated that he has the capacity to be governor of Illinois.
Right. I mean, if he had shown up and had not answered the questions, then the focus of his response or the stories about his response would have been that he didn't answer any questions rather than just repeating or citing the press release that he put out saying that I'm going to grow the economy and that's going to take care of everything.
But see, that's a disservice to the public in my mind. If you want to be governor, you darn well better be able to answer those questions. You better have some specific policies and not just run on sound bites. It's not like we're selling light beer or Cheerios in this stuff. We're trying to choose the best person to lead Illinois forward. And when you have some guy who's not willing to say anything either because he doesn't know what to say or he's just following this marketing campaign, I think that's a real insult to voters.
Well, I'm not defending it, Charlie. I'm just saying that that's probably the reason he didn't show up down here is because he wasn't prepared to answer questions. And
if I were one of his advisors, I'd tell him to stay hundreds of miles away from Springfield and the Springfield Press Corps.
You're listening to State Week. Just ahead, we'll talk about some of the plans that House Speaker Michael Madigan has for the Constitution.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and Gatehouse Media's Doug Finke. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. I should also note that we have a small audience watching State Week today. Some visitors from the Ukraine looking at the United States and its political systems, and we welcome them and hope they're enjoying hearing about Illinois politics as opposed to what's going on in their own country right now that's rather dramatic as well. Moving on, one more question related to the budget, and we talked about this briefly earlier in the show, but it does appear that lawmakers, Democratic lawmakers, Amanda, are poised to push this thing through this spring.
We sure got those signals from the Democratic leaders of the House and Senate, both of whom, as I said, appear to have been in cahoots with Quinn in drafting at least the basic elements of this plan. The Senate President John Cullerton saying that he preferred for the House to go first. The House is more conservative and has fewer Democrats. Both have supermajorities, but just the one in the Senate is larger. And there are also fewer competitive races. Really next to none, one may even say, in the Senate. So it's less of a risk for legislators, because bear in mind, this isn't just a risk for Pat Quinn, who is obviously going to be the face of this income tax increase, but also for the sitting legislators. And so there'd been the thought, you know, maybe this will wait until after the November election. Madigan saying no, he expects this to be resolved by May 31. I would key in, however, on that phraseology, expects this to be resolved.
I would be very, very surprised if it doesn't pass before May 31st for the very reason you said. For most incumbents, it's more likely that they're going to get hit by a car walking across Second Street than it is that they're going to lose in November. And the reason is, for starters, there's 40 Senate Democrats. 28 of them aren't even up for election this time. When they were elected 2 years ago, they got four-year terms. Of the other 12, seven of them have no opponent. So there's 35 votes right there where there's no risk at all in November. In the House, 45 of the House Democrats have no Republican opponent. There's three lame ducks. That's 48. Of the 23 with Republican opposition, six of them voted for the tax hike in 2010 and got elected 2 years later, 2 years ago. And 13 of them won by 60% or more of the vote. So the danger there is not very great. You only need 60 votes, and Madigan certainly can round up 60 votes of people who are quite safe. So as I say, I would be extremely surprised if it doesn't happen by May.
I nonetheless think that if you look at the speaker's phraseology, that there's an opening for something. Maybe it won't be this exact plan. I think when you listen to the words, there may be intentional wiggle room. He didn't say, we'll get this passed by May 31st. He said, this will be resolved by May 31st, and I support the plan. So maybe this will be it. There may also be some sort of opportunity for give there perhaps a rollback of the tax rate, so it could say, hey, you know, instead of 5%, maybe we're going to give you 4.5 or something to that effect in an attempt to make it a little more palatable. I think that this is early on. Yes, it appears very much as if the Democratic supermajorities are poised to do something that would not leave Illinois with this great fiscal cliff midway through the fiscal year in January when the tax hike would otherwise roll back. But Madigan chooses his words carefully, and I know prior to one of a previous budget, or maybe it was a State of the State speech from the governor, he'd said, you know, we're going to get this done by May in terms of pensions. And lo and behold, that didn't happen. It took another year or so for that to occur. So it's early on, and this, I think, leads into what you next want to talk about, Bill, that the speaker has other budget issues up his sleeve, namely a constitutional amendment that he has gotten through a House committee, at the very least, that would levy a tax on millionaires.
A beautiful segue there, Amanda. And with that, it has advanced through a House committee. Madigan has a couple of constitutional amendment proposals. This one would be, of course, the tax on millionaires, an increased surcharge, as they call it.
Well, what it would say is that for every dollar above $1 million, you would pay an additional 3% tax. So if you have $999,999 as your taxable income, you pay the same rate as the guy who has $12,000 as taxable income. But for every dollar beyond that, you would pay 3% in addition.
Is this to send a message that we have a millionaire, more than a multimillionaire running for office against Pat Quinn, or is this to get people out to the ballot box?
I think it's an element of both. I think that you very clearly have a political calculation. Madigan came out with the millionaire's tax right after Bruce Rauner won the GOP nomination. So Republicans right away saying, hey, this is clearly intentional and probably a brilliant move at that. Who, when you look at a public that's facing potentially paying more and saying, hey, I can't afford this, sure, let the millionaires pay. I'm guessing that will prove very popular. But as you said, Bill, it's not the only one, and it may not be. There are some, I think, predictions that we may see more out of the speaker when it comes to constitutional amendments. And of course, you have that coupled with Bruce Rauner and his initiative to amend the state constitution by adding term limits for legislators. And there's also a fairly robust movement to change how legislative districts are drawn. And that would also require a change in the constitution. That's being driven by a ballot initiative. And of course, there's also this progressive income tax question, one that Madigan, it's clear, did not embrace. That immediately after his millionaire's tax got through that House committee, it failed. The progressive or graduated tax failed in that very same committee. But nonetheless, this may be some sort of effort to drive Democratic turnout with initiatives like his millionaire's tax, or with this saying that voter suffrage and diversity constitutional amendment to try and drive turnout, but maybe also to cloud the ballot some and just to have a whole lot of constitutional amendments. Perhaps that would maybe, I don't know, in some sort of calculation, either help to not to lead to a failure of the term limits initiative. I don't know if that'll work. But.
And the one you just mentioned there, the House Speaker, not known for really putting constitutional amendments on the ballot, but It appears like the millionaire tax one would be heading that way. And this one that reads, no person shall be denied the right to register to vote or to cast a ballot in an election based on race, color, ethnicity, status, or member of language minority, sex, sexual orientation, or income. And to me, I don't recall many problems in Illinois of people having a trouble with the right to vote. So this would seem that you cast this as kind of an anti-discrimination measure, and you may be able to bring some of that Democratic base out, whether they support same-sex marriage or minority issues. But it seems a way to get some Democratic supporters out to the ballot box that might not otherwise have gone.
Well, that could be, and it's kind of reminiscent of what Republicans have done in some of the red states, where they put on things to define marriage as being a relationship between only a man and a woman to get their base to the polls. There really isn't a problem. Madigan's explanation was that, well, look what's happened in some of these other states where there have been concerted efforts to impose restrictions on voting that would tend to work against people of color or people of limited means. We want to preclude that happening in Illinois. I personally don't think it's going to happen in Illinois with or without an amendment, but, you know, who am I? I'll defer to his judgment. On the other hand, it is something you can sell, I would think, in minority communities and say, this is an amendment that will make sure that what they've done in, I don't know, Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia or South Carolina isn't going to happen here in Illinois.
Time now for notes from the field, and I'll start with Doug Finke.
There was a poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute that came out this week that showed a majority, I think it was 60% of Illinois voters are against continuation of the income tax increase. At the same time, a majority said they were against cuts in areas like education and public safety and natural resources. So the electorate is out there saying they don't want to pay the taxes, but they don't want to cut the services either.
Yeah, that is seems to be an age-old story we've heard. And Amanda Venicky.
I will leave us from the budget fund and move on over to one of the many interesting bills that begin to work its way through the General Assembly. So moving from budgets to bobcats and a measure advanced through the House that would allow hunting and trapping of those cute little critters who the sponsor of the legislation says that bobcats are a danger and they're becoming more prominent in Illinois after they had been really low populations and were outlawed in the 70s. Bringing it back.
And they're cute creatures to you. You've obviously never been attacked by one, Amanda.
No.
Have you?
God. I have not either. I just had to.
Not weaning on the merits or not of the legislation.
You know, everybody has a different vantage point of legislation depending on their personal experience. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media, our guest, and we thank him. And we thank folks from Ukraine for watching. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer, also audio also provided by the Illinois Lawmakers Public Television Show. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.